The following program is a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you like it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Go to am1260therock.com and click on the orange donate button.
The humanity of the priest is a bridge to encountering Christ and should not be a barrier. People always say, like, well, if you weren't a priest, what would you be doing? And I'm like, it's hard for me to think of anything other than what I'm doing.
That's what we're striving to discern, is what is God's plan, his dream, his will, his desire for me, where I'm going to be most fulfilled. And it really is through living a sacramental life that is absolutely going to support that.
When you're married, you have to realize it's not just you anymore. It's you and your wife and God.
If you desire to be truly happy, then your life should not be about you.
Welcome to God Calling, our locally produced program that explores the various vocations available to Catholics in all walks of life. Now here's your host, Paul Orlowski.
Thanks for tuning in to God Calling. I'm Paul Orlowski. This week we're joined by Father Michael Stalla. Father, you've been a priest in the Diocese of Cleveland since 2003.
Correct.
Where'd you grow up?
I'm originally from Westlake area. My home parish was in Avon, Holy Trinity.
Oh, sure. Know it well.
Kind of an amazing story. Father Tim Garreau actually grew up in the same house as I did.
No kidding.
When his family moved out, my family moved in.
So, okay.
Yeah, we had two priests from the same house.
Wow. That should be a shrine, I think. Something that, can we get the bishop to do something about that? Well, Father Tim is a long time at St. Raphael's and now down in Brunswick. Mm-hmm. Wonderful guy, friend of mine. But that's interesting. I had no clue about that.
Yeah.
So what was your religious life like?
So growing up, I grew up in a very Catholic household. I'm one of seven children, and we always went to church on Sunday. I remember that made an impact on me. My dad would, no matter where we traveled, he'd always said that's got to be a priority. It didn't matter if we were on vacation or on a business trip. And sometimes I remember some of his business partners kind of mocking him about that.
Uh-huh.
But he just held to it. This is important. And that really stuck with me. And, of course, I grew up with my grandparents praying and teaching me about the faith in their ways. And then my siblings and I just talking about this at the dinner table, just being able to say this is something worth having conversation about. And we get pretty deep into it. I really enjoyed growing up in a Catholic household.
Example is so important.
Mm.
But I'm half Italian. I don't look it. But my grandmother, you know, everybody wants a priest in the family. My grandmother, Paulie, why don't you become a priest? My cousin John got me off the hook. He's a priest. So. But it's just very important. But, Holy Trinity, rather, is actually older than the cathedral, the building itself.
I think it's second oldest in the diocese. It's like it goes way back.
Yeah. Did you go to school there?
I did, Holy Trinity grade school with the Notre Dame Sisters. It's wonderful there, and I have nieces and nephews there now.
Okay. What about high school?
St. Ignatius High School.
Yeah, the Jesuits there.
Yeah, the Jesuits. Yeah, I think they're still upset I didn't become a Jesuit. So, you know, what can I say?
When did you first start to get an inkling, Father?
So I suppose when I was a little boy, you know, if you would have asked me, what do you want to be when you grow up, I would have said a priest.
Mm-hmm.
It really kind of went on the back burner once I realized there were girls in the classroom. And that'll happen.
Familiar story.
Just normal, right? So I kind of didn't talk about it much. I figured I'd be a businessman like my dad. And all of a sudden, when I was in high school, I went on a wilderness retreat. It was just a wonderful experience. And just praying. And all of my classmates all said that I was voted most likely to become a priest.
Hmm.
And I thought, gosh.
News to you.
Do they know something I don't know? So I still put it on the back burner. It wasn't really until I was 20 years old. My grandfather was living with us, and he was the one relative who was not Catholic. And he was dying. He's missing his wife, who had died not too long earlier. And he said, Michael, I think your grandma's in heaven, and I want to see her again. Do you think God could do that for me? And I said, oh, God's wonderful. God sure would love to do something like that. And he says, well, then how do I get in good with God? And here I am with like the most important question in history. And I'm like, I guess you got to get baptized. I guess that's kind of like the normal route to go.
Uh-huh.
So he said, well, let's do it. And the priest came to baptize him and received First Holy Communion as well as confirmation. And it was on that day I sensed deep down inside of me like a voice, why don't you want to become a priest?
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And for like 3 days, I couldn't sleep. Wow. And I finally was just like, all right, you know what? I think I got to look into this. All right, God, I'm going to go look at the seminary. If I don't like it, I'm going home. Can I finally get some sleep?
Were you in college at this time?
I was in college and I was working at the same time. So I was living out of the home and taking care of grandpa with my mom. And I went and visited the seminary and I was like, okay, you know what? They seem like brothers to me. Saw a couple of guys argue with each other. I was like, yep, just like brothers.
Yeah.
And I went, yeah, just normal people with the same question in their heart that I had. Where am I going and how do I listen to God to pursue his will? And kind of 1 year led into another.
Mm-hmm. I've used this example often, but I think when we're talking about this, from the outside, some people have this idea that everybody's running around in the seminary with Gregorian chant down these long halls all day long. And, you know, the guys are playing basketball and football and soccer and, you know, on and on. It goes with regular guys, like you say, arguing with one another. It's normal.
It was normal stuff. And, you know, I had the same impression. I didn't know what I was going to see when I got there. I didn't know if they're going to lock the doors behind me. So when I got there, it was so refreshing to just see normal people taking seriously their faith. And that's what I was looking for. That's what I really wanted.
Mm-hmm. How long did Grandpa stay around? Did he see you go enter the seminary?
It's interesting because Grandpa actually said, I don't think I could live if Michael's not here. And God, in his gentleness, in his kindness, took my grandfather the day I left for the seminary.
Wow.
And so I was always grateful for that. It was like, okay, I did my part. He did his. Now it's time for the next chapter.
Boy, that's a powerful. How do you ignore that one?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's wonderful. So you're in the seminary, surprised by, well, certainly not the camaraderie in that, but how was the coursework? Was that difficult?
So I already had a couple of years under my belt, so I had to study philosophy for the last 2 years, get my degree from John Carroll. Would I think of it as difficult? I thought it was very interesting. It was so neat to understand perspectives. I guess that's the great thing about philosophy. You learn about other people's way of thinking and how does it fit into truth with a capital T. And I really enjoyed that. And then it was on to theology, and you just learn everything you ever wanted to know about the Holy Church and help each other to get through that and have a deeper and deeper growing in your spirituality and your sense that God was indeed guiding me and had a plan.
When you were in the seminary, so you got out in 03, so probably in 01, 02, did they send you out to parishes to get some experience, internships as they do today?
Yeah, exactly like we do today, a little bit different kind of ministries. But I had the opportunity to work at La Sagrada Familia my first year and St. Monica's grade school to teach in the classrooms. Went to St. Charles in Parma for my internship. I worked with Hospice of the Western Reserve. And then as a deacon, I was over at St. Bernard's in Akron. Oh. And so you might notice that a couple of those assignments, they speak Spanish.
Oh, yes.
So the seminary knew that I had some Spanish in my background, and they wanted to promote that. So they often gave me assignments that would use my Spanish skills.
Were the skills as good as they assumed, or did you have to do some studying there, too?
I think I faked it pretty well at first, but those that I ministered to, they knew the difference, and they were always helping me and developing it. So by the time I was ordained, I was sent to St. Mary's in Painesville, and I was ready to go. I was ready to be a priest in a bilingual setting.
Mm-hmm. Father, stay right there where you are, and I hope our listeners will stay right where they are, too, and continue to listening to God Calling on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. Father Michael Stalla is our guest on God Calling today. Father, you're out there at St. Mary's. What's that like?
So St. Mary's, Painesville, I was really enjoying doing Hispanic ministry as well as working with those who are Americans and learning the different cultures, the different ways that things are expressed. I really especially enjoyed the spirituality of these different cultures. There were Italians, there were Polish, there were Hungarians, and of course the Mexicans. And so now I'm like getting deeper and deeper into there's lots of ways to come to know Jesus Christ. And that idea that St. Paul had, that I have to be all things to all people, clicked for me. It was like, okay, when I'm with this group, this is how you preach. When you're with this group, this is how you preach. So it was interesting because you almost had like different homilies depending on your community, depending on who was there.
Yeah, and you're a young guy at that time, kind of getting your toe wet.
Yeah, 28 years old and just really excited and running.
Yeah. What happened next? Where did they send you next?
So then after I was finished with St. Mary's, I was thinking about, did God want me to go to the missions? And I knew that I had to be ordained 5 years to even bring up that question. And now I'd only finished four. And I remember I got a phone call and Father Alexiak said, "Mike, we're thinking about your next assignment. And I have to be honest, I can't think of another parish that needs a Spanish-speaking priest." And my response was, "My English is pretty good." So I ended up working at St. Rayfield's, and that's where I was.
I first saw you.
Back with Father Tim, and it was just wonderful being there. I only had 2 years there, but they were like really, really important years of my priesthood and friendships. And my family was just in Westlake, so they started coming to Mass there. They still go to church there. It's just a really wonderful experience in my life.
I think I might have been there when they announced that you were going to El Salvador. I think. More than I remember anymore, Father.
But it was from St. Rayfield's that I was sent to the missions.
Now, did they kind of knew that you wanted to do that, or were they just taking advantage of your Spanish speaking skills?
To be honest, I really didn't want to. I thought about it. Mm-hmm. Father Steve Alenga, who was my pastor at St. Mary's, he had been a missionary and already speaking Spanish. A lot of people assume that that's what I would do. And even while I was a seminarian, I had visited the missions many times. And I came to the conclusion, those spiders are as big as your hand. I didn't want anything to do with that. I was scared to death about like living there, man. I'm doing 1 week at a time a year, working with the Hispanics up here, plenty of work to do. So I remember I was praying and I said, "All right, Lord, I'm 5 years ordained now. If you want me to go to the missions, you're going to have to make it abundantly clear because I really think there's enough to do here." Mm-hmm. And that day that I said that prayer, three different people asked me, "Hey, you ever think about being a missionary? You know, you'd be a good missionary. Hey, I hear they're looking for missionaries. You going to apply?" And I mentioned it to Father Garreau, and he said, "Well, you know how God works. Why don't you tell the bishop you would be willing?" And I did, and the bishop gave me a message. He said, "I've received your application to become a missionary." I said, whoa, I didn't go that far here. So I said yes.
That's wonderful. What was that experience like?
El Salvador? Well, it was 6 years that I lived there. When I first got down there, I knew a lot of the people because as a seminarian, I had visited often one village in particular, Teotepeque. And so when I got there, I knew a lot of the people. That was so amazing that I got sent to the same place mm-hmm. I had been visiting. It was a crash course in what it means to be a missionary. I mean, they said, "Well, you speak Spanish. You'll figure it out," as if that's the only training I needed. So luckily, Father Mark Riley said, "Okay, I'm going to stay with you for a while. I'm going to get you going." He stayed over a year with me and said, "I'll teach you how this happens." And I was just amazed at what he was able to do, the love he had for the people, the creativity he had to solve problems. And everybody was very poor in our area. It was a farming community, and nobody spoke English. But they came to us with a great deal of respect. I think it's because Cleveland's had missionaries there for now 60 years.
Yeah.
And in fact, four of our missionaries had died down there.
Correct.
And we still stuck to the mission. And so they knew, you know, "You've bled with us. You would never abandon us." So all I had to do was say I was from Cleveland, and I was in.
You're in.
You know? And so that was beautiful. I just loved being with them in that sense. But I must admit, it was a difficult mission.
What is the work like? I mean, obviously, you're bringing the sacraments. You're bringing the word of Christ, the gospel. But there's a lot of getting your hands dirty in missionary work as well.
Yeah, I would say the older missionaries I really admire because it feels like a young man's game. You are running and running. So we took care of 26 different communities, and that would be 26 church buildings, 26 parish councils, 26, server trainings. And so it was a lot of training the laity. That was a big part of it. Because obviously, I'm not going to say 26 masses in a Sunday. Most of the communities only got mass once a month. So when the priest came, it was time for whatever you need the priest for. Uh-huh. So they'd say, "All right, well, today you get to train the servers, and we're going to do this baptism, and there's a wedding today. Oh, and by the way, there's a funeral." And so we're going to do that all at the same time. And it was really like, wow. I remember saying to the couple that wanted their wedding, I said, "Are you okay with a funeral during your wedding?" They said, "Well, it is my uncle. Do you mind, Father?" I said, "Okay, let's do it." So we did it. So that was pretty amazing. What they needed a priest for you really felt needed. Everywhere you went, everything they need a priest for, today's the day. The anointings, the confessions, the teachings, the counsel, that was the moment. And it was like every day was like that. Every day was another community. It's the first time they've seen you all month.
Talk about multitasking.
Yeah.
I'm interested, how do you do it? The homily for the funeral and the wedding, oh boy. I hope you had some divine intervention on that one, Father.
I did pray a lot in many occasions saying, Lord, you got to help me here. I don't know what I'm into.
So then you came back to Cleveland eventually. What was that? That was in 15.
Yes, 2015, I completed my mission. I was asked to be there only 6 years, so it was time to come home. And I brought with me a great deal of experience, and I was sad to leave the people that I served, but to be honest, the security issues were starting to get on my nerves, and it was nice to have nice, safe Cleveland, and it was good to be home with the family and share the experiences with others, and it felt almost like a dream.
Yeah. Where'd they send you?
My assignment when I got back was as pastor of Saints Cosmas and Damien in Twinsburg.
I went to a 20th or 25th celebration there for priests, the Singler brothers.
Very good.
The twins.
Yes. Yes.
And one of them was pastor there at the time, wasn't he?
Father John Singler was the pastor, a couple pastors before me.
Okay, yeah. And Bishop Lennon did the service. But yeah, the twins were at St. Cosmas and Damien.
Right, isn't that great? Twin priests at Twinsburg.
It's perfect. Father, stay where you are. We're on God Calling on AM 1260 The Rock, and we'll be right back after these messages. Back on God Calling with Father Michael Stalla. Father, you were at, for 6 years, was it, at St. Cosmas and Damien as the pastor?
I was 8 years, actually.
8 years, okay.
As the pastor of St. Cosmas and Damien, all the way up until this past summer.
Okay. Now, you're doing quite a bit with the diocese now from the standpoint of the, your presbyterial minister at St. Anthony's of Padua in Fairport Harbor, right?
Right.
And then also on the clergy personnel board.
That's correct.
What does that job entail?
So the clergy personnel board is a council that kind of helps the bishop in his decisions. We work with the director of clergy, and we look at the assignments that are needed, the skill sets that people have, maybe some personal needs that priests would have, and deacons for that matter, and we'd help find assignments. It's especially helpful for the newly ordained and for the parochial vicars when they do their transfer. But it also includes for those who are applying for pastorship. And if we don't have an application, maybe a tap on the shoulder to say, you should think about becoming pastor there.
Just like the bishop, when he accepted your application to go to El Salvador.
I probably shouldn't say that. Now people with caller ID are going to say, oh, Michael Stalla's calling? Maybe I shouldn't answer.
Oh, goodness. And then another part of that job, I suppose, is you being on the board, yes, but also teaching at the seminary.
Yeah, so I'm in charge of pastoral formation over at St. Mary's Seminary. I'm also going to be working on being a formator for the College Borromeo. And my role over there, more than anything, is working with preaching skills and giving workshops before I send the seminarians into the field, just like I did once upon a time, so they can teach in a classroom, so that they can work with parish groups in a parish, so that they can continue to whatever ministries that they might do as priests, that they feel a comfort level, and especially when it comes to the questions of how do you deal with this? And so I accompany them on that journey.
Well, people bring a lot of problems, troubles on their journey. Maybe people don't go enough to the priest because they're seeking things elsewhere, but you hear a lot of troubles, and you got to prepare the guys to do it.
You know, the wise, I would say, seek us out a little earlier. But when the pieces all fall apart, it seems like everyone goes, all right, Father, you got to help me out. And of course we will. And so I train the men that will experience that to say, you're an essential part of people's families, people's spiritualities, people's community. And some of it is about theology, but a lot of it is about caring enough about someone to say, how can I help? How can I help you process through this thinking? And how can I network you with those people that I know?
Sometimes when people come, they think they're going there for affirmation of what they're doing. Hmm. And I suspect at some point in time you say, no, you're a little off on this one. Is that a tough conversation to have?
You know, it is interesting that we have the title father, and it is like a fatherly role that we have. When we first get a chance to meet a parish or parishioners, we tend to be a lot more gentle. The longer you get to know us, the longer that we form that relationship, we get to the point that you know that I love you. You know that I'm not going to be against you. Mm-hmm. So when I challenge you, will you hear it? Will you listen? And so the longer we're there with people, they can accept if we're saying it's time to change course. That's not working for you.
Okay.
But at first, it's a little bit more like, let's build that relationship.
Now, your doctoral focus is a neat title, Collaboration, Clusters, and Evangelization, which given, you know, what we're doing, a lot more dependency on the laity and collaboration clusters, just exactly what that said. A lot of balls in the air, juggling a lot of things these days.
You know, I guess I wanted to give a model to the seminarians that you can wear multiple hats at the same time and still do a good job with it. It's not like I'm stretched to the point of breaking. It's just there's lots of jobs that need to be handled and not as many clergy as before. However, my experience in the missions, taking care of those 26 communities and working on developing the laity to do the jobs that they can do so that I'm free to do the jobs that only a priest can do, is really kind of the model. And how do we do this together to help each other from neighboring parishes to say, hey, you're really good at this, I'm really good at that. Let's share our resources, not necessarily money, but more like the volunteer skill sets of your parishioners or the facilities or experiences that we have in ministry to say, I'll supply this if you could help me out with that.
I won't name names, but we're doing a bit of that where I live. Talked to somebody from the other parish one time about, hey, this is nice, we're enjoying it. He goes, well, we have to get here early now because you take all of our seats. Okay. But now I'm very friendly with her, you know.
But it will take some adjustment. These are new ways of thinking about doing church, and our people and our priests are not really used to it yet. Yeah. So it's just we're trying to gradually get there.
Yeah. Sounds like you had a pretty strong call. If someone's thinking of how do they begin the process, talk to a priest, I assume. But then we talk to a lot of folks that say in their discernment, it's like, God, please tell me I don't want to do this. And then they discover that was their call. How would you guide? Somebody came into you and said, Father, maybe I have a religious call. What would you say to them?
So I start with just the basics. Make sure you have a routine of prayer. You're going to Mass. You're receiving the sacraments. Going to confession. Let's get into that routine. But from there, you need somebody to walk with you. And sometimes that's a pastor, sometimes that's a spiritual director, and sometimes it's just a confidant, a friend that takes seriously these questions. Because there's a lot of people in our culture that are very mature, very sophisticated, except when it comes to spirituality. Then it becomes almost like a little joke. And it's like, no, you need to find people in your life that will say, I really want to know, what does God want of me? How can I please the Lord? And just finding that one other person to help develop that conversation is really the best advice I could give somebody. And from there, the Lord will continue. We said, where two or more are gathered, so shall I be. It makes me think, if you're by yourself and in the echo chamber of your own mind, you don't really come up with a lot of answers.
Mm-hmm.
So being with somebody else, praying together, some of the basics, but also taking seriously the questions, I think makes a big difference.
You've been there for a year or so, but you're probably now dealing with young people who have had a lot of influence by social media, which didn't exist before. Probably a deep question. I've got about a minute left, but what do they say about how do they avoid the pitfalls of the internet, I guess?
You know, that is something we talk about very often as human formation at the seminary. Everybody comes from a culture. They're coming from someplace. And so let's look at that, and especially with the philosophy foundations that we use, let's look at it critically. What is it about the culture that they need more help? We can guide them. What is it about the culture we need to just let go of?
Mm-hmm.
And so there are always good things, but there's also some pitfalls. We talk about it very frequently.
Father, thank you for joining us.
You're
a delightful
welcome.
Conversation.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Father Michael Stalda joining us on God Calling. We are here each and every week at this very same time on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio. I'm Paul Orlowski, your host. I hope to have you tune in next week at this very same time.
Thank you for listening to God Calling. If you missed part of today's show or you just want to hear it again, go to our website, AM1260TheRock.com, and click on the On Demand tab. And remember, wherever you are in life, God is calling you.
The preceding program was a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you liked it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock.
Click on the orange donate button at am1260therock.com.